shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
This is a Triple M footy news update.
This is massive, this story.
Not a little exclusive.
With Tom Brown.
It's a massive Monday morning Triple M footy news update with Tom Brown. My name's Rudy Edsel. I've got Tommy here. We're going to run through all the big stories. Paddy McCartan in some match review trouble in the VFL. A heap of injuries out of the weekend. We've got some contract news. And, of course, we can't do a Triple M footy news update without touching on Collingwood. Tommy, how are you?
Good morning, Rudy.
It's a very good morning. It's a very it's a cool morning in Melbourne, but that won't stop us from giving you all the hot footy news. Let's go with some early breaking news from today. Paddy McCartan is in some trouble.
Yeah, faces a lengthy suspension for his appearance in the VFL over the weekend for what can only be described as a pretty wild Andrew Gaff, Barry Hall-like punch. Fox Footy, David Zita, has posted that vision this morning. The VFL have their own tribunal process. There's no Michael Christian as such for the MRO from a VFL point of view. They've got their own panel. But you have to think that's 4, 6, 8 weeks based on the potential to cause injury. The Geelong player that he hit ended up with a bruised jaw, not a broken jaw, and apparently not concussion. But it's a violent, quick action, and there's two of them. He looks like he's pretty handy in the ring, Paddy, but particularly given the fact that he's had a well-documented history of concussion that ended his career, 8 concussions, it's a surprise that Paddy would be up to that sort of business. And if in case you're worried that we're prejudging him, as I said, the vision's on Fox Footy.
It is, yeah, and it's pretty confronting stuff. He throws an extremely quick right that makes – it's Aaron Black, the Geelong – I think he's the VFL captain – makes him very groggy, goes down.
He had a dirty day, Paddy. He only had one touch.
Yeah, well, I think he also injured his hand in a separate incident and was and couldn't continue. But Aaron Black apparently not they found not concussed and only had a swollen jaw, which is really a miracle if you
but
see
the rules
vision.
Take into account the potential to cause injury. So yeah, it could easily be high or even severe impact, really.
I think. You simply can't be throwing punches like that in the footy field. So I imagine that he'll have the book thrown at him. Now, Tommy, you wanted to come in and chat some injuries. We've had some big ones over the weekend. Adam Tomlinson looks like an ACL. You broke the news of Jack Viney's toe.
Yeah, so Melbourne's injury depth is going to start to get tested. They're absolutely flying, Melbourne, make no mistake. But Tomlinson, who does free up Lever, looks like he's got an ACL. Simon Goodwin acknowledged that post-game. He's having scans on that today. Jack Viney, interesting one, late out, trained Saturday, but has a hot spot on his toe. Now, Melbourne say 2, 3, 4 weeks, they'll basically deload him and build him back up again. But Viney's had well-documented issues with both feet. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. Trent Cotchin will have scans on his hamstring today. It looks like a standard hamstring, 3, 4, 5 weeks. But again, he's got a recent soft tissue history as well. Another interesting one, Zach Williams at Carlton was a late, well, not a late withdrawal. He was out due to what Carlton described as general soreness. Some mail I get from Carlton, from the Blues, is that that's a sore Achilles. Now, ordinarily, that's not much of a worry. Carlton again said yesterday post-game that they expect him to play this week. But Williams had a year off, I think, with an Achilles injury back in 2019. So not suggesting this is going to be a year off, but given his history, definitely one to keep an eye on. And I wouldn't say Carlton are creative with their injury narrative, because a lot of their injuries are collision-based. But I've said it on this program before, they've got the best fitness guy in the competition, Andrew Russell. He gets paid an absolute mozza, $500,000 or $600,000 a year, and they've got a lot of injuries. So I don't think they cover them up, but they're usually a little bit creative sometimes.
This wasn't on the rundown, but you mentioned sort of creative injury news, and I'm not suggesting anything here, but what did you make of Tom Hickey coming back from a 6 to 8 week PCL injury in 1 week? That's a remarkable turnaround, and he was amazing on Saturday night.
Yeah, but they've said if he suffers a knock again, that could not set him back, but sort of put him back on that 6 to 8 weeks. So what are they relying on? There's no more knocks. Is that the crux of it?
I'm not sure. Horse said in the post-match interview that because Ruckman's knees are always so sore that they sort of rebounded from the soreness pretty quickly.
I'll investigate that today further. That sounds interesting.
There's also some injury concerns for Tom Rockliffe from the Sandford game on the weekend. Apparently hurt his knee, and there's concerns about the season for him, I've heard. That's also not on the rundown, so I don't expect you to know a heap about it. But
I'll follow that up with his manager and with the club today.
So, yeah, big concerns there. Now, Tommy, you also wanted to bring some contract news to the table out of Carlton and Richmond.
Yeah, a couple of standout contract stories from the weekend. Harry McKay, 4 goals, or Mackay, I should say, 4 goals. He's out of contract. At one stage, he was after $700,000 a year at the start of the season, and a lot of people thought that was a bit overcooked. He wasn't worth that, but he's coming into his own, isn't he? I think there's a few clubs now that would definitely
second
be
in the Coleman? Second in the Coleman? Yeah.
And often inaccurate, but he seems to have straightened up as well. So he's flying. And Shai Bolton, His market value has skyrocketed again, one of Richmond's best against the Bulldogs, managed by Ralph Carr, Dusty's manager, who knows how to do a deal. He's quite a shrewd negotiator. And I'm getting told that his market value is in the vicinity of $800,000 a year. Now, I asked Damien Harbig about this post-game, and Dimmer said, of course, you've got to sacrifice something to be in the Richmond model. And I'm sure Shire's prepared to do that, but I don't know to what extent. It's going to be an interesting discussion that they're delaying those talks they put on record last week until the end of the year, or after the season.
Do you have a sight on what Richmond could offer him?
No, but it'd have to be, you'd have to think it'll be 650 or 700 to be competitive. Yeah. They're one of the clubs I mentioned last week as having one of the more tight salary caps, which is no surprise given their incredible success, which frankly at the moment looks like it could continue.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they can keep Shire Bolton, that could seriously, he's incredible against...
And he keeps getting better every time they ask more of him when other players go out.
Yeah, he's a seriously impressive player. What a superstar he already is. Now, I mentioned off the top, we can't really get away without talking Collingwood. Big loss to Gold Coast, and we sort of flagged last week that if the heat would come on them big time, I said they couldn't possibly lose to the Gold Coast, shows what I know, but we said the heat would come on them big time, and fair to say, Tommy, it has.
It certainly has. There's a bit of a debate whether the loss to the Gold Coast was a shock, because I think the Gold Coast were 11th on the ladder and a chock full of talent. I think the Gold Coast beat the Swans, and the Swans beat Geelong, so if you frank the Gold Coast form, it sort of adds up, which is interesting, but I still think it was a surprise that Collingwood lost, put it that way. The Pies won't move, I hear, on Bucks. Bucks would have to move himself. I can't see a situation where Collingwood's going to march him out of the building. I've spoken to a number of greats of the club in past weeks privately. You don't want to go on the record at this stage, but there's some questioning privately of the game plan. There's some now real questioning whether the players are fully on board. Clearly, most of them are invested, but you know, the wheels are starting to look like they might be falling off. Graham Wright made interesting comments pre-game on Saturday that Nathan Buckley was tracking in the right direction as far as a contract extension was concerned. Having said that, that was before the loss to the Suns. The clubs emphasised again over the weekend that the timetable is set, that they'll review this in the middle of the year, or even this, you know, the sort of the middle to that part of the year, basically. Yep. So what's that round, sort of 10 to 14?
Yeah.
They've got a buy in for round 14.
Yes, I believe they do. And they play North Melbourne this weekend. Now,
that's massive.
You said they won't move on him, but if they lose to North, does that change the equation, do you think? Or is that...
If they lost to North, it looks like they're in that sort of like that coaching death spiral where they've dropped to the Suns and North, and that would be a hard one for the club to explain. I thought, what did you make of Nathan Buckley's comments regarding where Darcy Moore's playing post-game? I asked Bucks this question, and he said, well, where Darcy Moore's playing, which is forward, is the least of our worries at the moment. It's all about Team D, team defence, and it's not just up to Darcy Moore. So he sort of hinted they might leave him there. But my point on that is that you're turning a positional win, he's the best centre-half back in the competition, into a positional loss. He's probably the 50th or 60th best forward, and frankly, he's finding it difficult to find the ball. He had four touches.
Look, to me, I mean, I'm no footy analyst, but to me, he looks a significantly better defender than he does forward. He's probably, as you said, like an all-Australian level key defender, and I just don't see why you would move a guy who's so good at that role to a different role, personally. But it's, yeah, like I said, I'm not a footy analyst.
A couple of other Collingwood observations. I don't think Bucks on the current win-loss record, based on my information, would get extended. Having said that, Wrighty seems supportive at this stage, Graham Wright. The club questioning the length of Grundy's contract can't be helping Grundy's form. I mean, the president, Mark Corder, last weekend again questioned the length of that deal. The market demand was there for that deal. So I don't think there's any upside in the club questioning that, and it can't probably be helping Grundy. Collingwood are going to need to rebuild or redevelop or whatever you want to call it. What do Essendon call it? They call it development, don't they?
Yes.
They don't like the rebuild word. Mm. And they're on track, the Bombers, by the way, it seems like. But that's not necessarily Bucks' strength. That's going to have to be a key question in terms of whether they need to work out whether Bucks deserves a two-year extension, or which is sort of being discussed in some articles this morning. And I reckon the supporters are upset, Rudy. So it's interesting.
Well,
I spoke to a number of supporters, a handful or at least, coming out of the game for our 7 News on Saturday. And I think a lot of them are just sort of confused as to where the club's at and feel like they've been a bit miscommunicated.
I can tell you for a fact that no Collingwood fan I know was thrilled with the loss to the Gold Coast on the MCG on the weekend. But yeah, I think Collingwood will come up again and again, I think. So we'll move on from there. Just before we do, Tommy, just a little word about Geelong icon Frank Costa.
Yeah, Frank Costa passed away yesterday morning, surrounded by his family, 83 years old. He was married to his wife for 61 years, had 8 daughters. He was family first, family, 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 but really was also the unofficial mayor of Geelong and probably was Geelong. And I spoke to Brian Cook yesterday, the Cat CEO, who described Frank as the most influential person in the history of the club. Now, that's coming from Brian Cook, so that's incredible. He also described how when they broke the drought in 2007, older people in the Geelong community were physically coming up to Frank Costa and saying, you know what, I've witnessed so much heartache down here from a footy point of view that I'm just going to die a happy person now, having witnessed that. It brought so much joy to the community. And I also spoke to Jeff Kennett, particularly about Frank's incredible business record. He started with a fruit shop in Moorabool Street, Geelong, turned it into Australia's, I think, biggest fruit wholesaler. And I think when they listed in 2015, I think Frank's net worth was is $800 million. So talk about a guy that's family, charity, football, and business. That is an incredible combination.
Putting my Geelong fan hat on, I can't speak highly enough about Frank Costa. I don't think it's unfair to say he's one of the greatest people ever involved with the Geelong Footy Club, and it's impossible to know where the club would be without him. He took over at a time of great pain down there, both the club and the city, and really the town of Geelong, the club just couldn't not owe him more. And a great man, and sad to see his passing.
Absolutely, Rudy. Hear, hear.
Mm. On that note, I think we'll leave it there, Tommy. You'll be back Wednesday morning for another chat. Sure there'll be lots of news.
Yeah, back Wednesday morning. I think Adam Tomlinson's just had scans today, so we'll have an update on that this afternoon on Triple M Footy and on 7 News tonight, Rudy.
Lovely. We'll see you later.